Good evening. Thanks for tuning in. This is RMU Radio. I'm Matt. With me is Chris, and this is Sports Takeover. It's Chris, let's jump right in. We'll start with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Thoughts on their start to the season?
Thoughts. What kind of thoughts can I have on the horrible 0-1-1 start we've seen so far? It's been bad on offense, defense, and special teams, just each taking turns with each other.
Yeah, my thought was just kind of disgusted. Like you said, taking turns, no full game yet. Week one, we had defense with no offense, no fourth quarter, two touchdowns with under 8 minutes to play in the fourth quarter in that game to blow a lead and end with a tie. And in week two, we had an offense but no defense and played no first quarter, trailing 21-0 to the Kansas City Chiefs after the first quarter.
See, the Chiefs make sense to me because I expected them to be a better team, but the Browns, they're the Browns still. Like, it's a game that we should open the season with and handle with ease, and we did not.
If you're going to call yourself a Super Bowl contender and go into the season with the idea that you can win the Super Bowl at the end of the season, a 14-point lead over the Cleveland Browns halfway through the fourth quarter is a game that you need to close out.
Absolutely, especially whenever Cleveland's looking for their first win in over a year still, and we let them get the tie anyway. It's very disappointing.
Yeah, very disappointing. And then you get to the Kansas City game. Like you said, it makes some sense because the Kansas City Chiefs are a better team, but the injuries are playing a big part in it too. The injury list, Artie Burns, undisclosed injury, David DeCastro with a hand, Hayden with a hamstring, Hayward with a knee, McDonald with a foot, Ben with an elbow, and then they just released, I think it was yesterday, Marcus Gilbert and Ramon Foster are now also on the injury list.
Yeah, this team is getting battered around a lot faster than they need to. The offense didn't actually look that bad against Kansas City. I mean, he still put up 37, which is very good against the Chiefs team, which has been known for their defense. But giving up 42 is rough, especially without Hayden and Burns, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and you've got an offense that's one of the top offenses in the league through 2 weeks, but you've got a defense that ranks 25th in the NFL in total defense, giving up 388 yards per game.
It makes you wonder if it's almost time for Keith Butler to hit the road.
Only a year in, and we're already talking about that. It's not a good start for the defense.
No, and special teams was disappointing for me as well. I mean, Switzer's looked all right, but, like, he hasn't done that much. Like, 10-yard returns aren't great. It's just basically somebody that's not Antonio Brown, but that we can just throw back there to catch the ball.
Yeah, I like Switzer, but special teams in general drives me crazy. Steelers special teams, football special teams. You can't see a kickoff or a punt return or anything without a block in the back or a hold. I don't know what teams are doing on special teams, Steelers included, but anything Switzer does comes straight back.
Yeah, and then on the other side of it, our punter, Jordan Berry. I used to think he was good about, you know, a year or two ago, but this season he's had like 40-yard punts, shank punts. Now, I understand not wanting Tyreek Hill to running back to the house.
Sure.
But you still got to get some distance on the ball, though. Like, you have a job to do, and you're not getting it done for the team when they need you the most.
Yeah, and Steelers fans let him know that on Sunday.
Oh, absolutely.
One more number on the Pittsburgh Steelers before we move on. Tied for 31st in the NFL in turnover differential at a -4.
Well, that mostly comes from the Cleveland game where Ben looked like he was ready to retire. I didn't think that the turnovers were an issue against Kansas City. I don't think we had.
No, I don't think so either. But it would be nice for the defense to make up just a little bit for a bad offensive performance, but they're not getting takeaways.
Well, against Kansas City, we barely got to the quarterback. We had one sack. It was Daniel McCullers, and we had, like, four quarterback pressures. That's not going to cause turnovers because you're not pressuring Mahomes. You're not going to force him to fumble, and he has all day to throw, so he's just going to wait for his receivers to get open.
Yeah, and besides that safety, I don't think they even had another tackle for loss.
Yeah, it was disappointing. Very, very disappointing.
Yeah, rough start to the season. Next week's going to be a big game for the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on in the NFL, other storylines through the first 2 weeks. Start with the Chicago Bears and Khalil Mack. Is this a playoff team? Could this be a playoff team?
It could be, but I don't think it will be. They still play in the same division that the Vikings and the Packers play in. So you got to play them two teams four times. You play the Lions twice, so you figure maybe split those two games. It's still rough, and the NFC, I'd argue, is better than the AFC overall.
Yeah, I totally agree. The NFC is definitely better than the AFC. It's deeper than the AFC. And that division's tough with Minnesota and Green Bay. Those are two teams that should definitely be in the playoffs. I had the Bears at 7-9 going into the season. I would say based on what I've seen so far, that's still where I'd put them.
Yeah, I mean, they blew the game against the Packers, but Aaron Rodgers put on one of the best performances that a quarterback has put on in the last 10 years.
Yes.
Like, they definitely should have won that game. But if they play the way they've played, they can be a playoff team. I just don't know that they can play to that level each week.
Yeah, and I think they have a playoff defense. Some numbers for their defense. They're eighth in total defense, first in sacks, tied for first in forced fumbles, fourth in rushing yards allowed per game, and tied for 13th in points allowed per game.
Well, you know why their defense is so good? One man.
Khalil Mack.
That's right.
Khalil Mack.
Oakland's garbage turned into Chicago's treasure, which I don't think anybody saw anything different coming out of him. Everybody knew he was one of the top five defensive players in the league. Just need to find his right home, I guess.
Yes, I agree. The other thing with the Bears that I would say will keep them out of the playoffs, obviously it's only 2 weeks in, but they are 29th in yards per game offensively.
Well, I wasn't convinced by Mitch Trubisky being the second pick last year by the Bears, and I'm still not convinced by him. He hasn't shown anything that's anything better than an average quarterback in the league can do.
Yeah, I agree. Moving along, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 2-0. They are one of two teams in the NFC that are 2-0. Do you think they will keep that up?
It's rough. Fitzpatrick is not going to play as well as he has. Like, he has been a career, like, average at best quarterback. He's only started all 16 games in three seasons, whereas he's been in the league for about 10 years. So you can see that he's not any team's overall starter. His best season was actually 3 years ago with the Jets. He went 10-6 with them, 3,900 yards, 31 touchdowns, 15 picks. Pretty good line. Other years, though, he's had 20 interceptions and maybe 25 touchdowns. Much closer ratio there.
Yeah, he's a weird quarterback. If you sign him to your team to be your backup quarterback, he has an odd way of finding a way to be a starter. And then another team decides that he'll be the starter for them, and he finds a way to be a pretty good backup. So, I mean, maybe it'll be a good year for him. He's supposed to be the backup. I don't know that he'll continue to be the backup when Jameis Winston comes back. I think he's kind of won that job from Jameis Winston.
Yeah, you would think that. Well, especially when you have people on the team like DeSean Jackson coming out and saying, yeah, if Fitzpatrick's going to play like this, he has to be our quarterback going forward. That kind of shows they gave up on Winston already, and they're just letting Fitzpatrick run the show for now.
Yeah, I mean, right now he's third in the league in completion percentage, first in yards, second in touchdowns, and first in QBR. A 151.5 is pretty impressive through two games, with 158.3 being a perfect QBR. So definitely a good start for him. And that offense ranks in the top two in most offensive categories.
I think the downfall with that offense will be, though, they don't have a running game. Like, if teams can figure out, okay, Fitzpatrick is throwing to O.J. Howard or he's throwing to DeSean Jackson, cover them, they have to hand it off to Peyton Barber, who last week he had 12 rushes for 22 yards. That's not going to get it done from your so-called number one back.
Yeah, they are 27th in rushing yards per game through 2 weeks at 77.5.
Yeah, I mean, the quarterback play has been great, but you still need to have a balanced offense as you get deeper into the season, you know, deeper into divisional games, that sort of thing.
Yes, you also have to have a defense, which currently for them is 31st in total defense and 27th in points allowed per game. So they're going to need something more than Ryan Fitzpatrick if they think they're going to get anywhere near the top of the NFC South.
Yeah, I mean, their defense is okay. Like, I like Jason Pierre-Paul. I like Gerald McCoy. But beyond them, they're kind of just thin in the secondary, thin at linebackers.
Yes.
And when you play, you know, the Panthers twice, the Falcons twice, and the Saints once more, those are teams that all have very capable quarterbacks to put up big numbers on you.
Yes, that's a secondary that's going to be put to work six times a season, if not more, depending on who else is on that schedule. So another player who's having a great start to the season is Patrick Mahomes for the Kansas City Chiefs. Can he keep up his production that he's got going through 2 weeks?
Where he differs from Ryan Fitzpatrick is he's young, on the rise. He has better receivers, I would argue, and he has a better running back so that he can kind of fall into his own groove without having to be the main guy. I'm surprised by the way he's played, though. I really didn't expect this from him going into the season.
No, I didn't expect it either. He's first in the NFL in touchdown passes with 10, which not only leads the league this year, but that's an NFL record through 2 years ever.
Yeah, that's really remarkable. I mean, our defense helped him with that a bit, but still. I didn't like the way Kansas City treated Alex Smith, similar to how San Francisco treated him. They're like, he is going to be our quarterback this year, but moving forward, no. I don't think Alex Smith is a bad quarterback. I think he's very capable of starting this league. And I did not expect Mahomes to have that much better of a start to the season than Kaepernick did after he was the main guy. But he's proven me wrong so far.
Yes, he has. And he's one of five starting quarterbacks in the NFL with no interceptions. So not only is he setting records for touchdown passes, he's not making mistakes right now either, which is big.
And even watching the game on Sunday, I could see his passes were very accurate. He also throws the ball very hard. I saw that at the combine, he had a 60-mile-an-hour ball, which was the tied for the fastest ever, actually.
Wow. Yeah. definitely a good start for him. For what it's worth, the Pittsburgh defense currently ranks 14th in pass defense, and the Chargers, who he's played already, ranked 13th. So those aren't horrible defenses.
Yeah, they're middle of the pack
numbers. Either. He's not doing this against, well, San Francisco, who he has this week, ranks 25th.
Yeah, that's
so I would
probably
say,
more of the same from him then.
Yes, I would expect more of the same from him. And my only other question with him would be this. He's 28th in pass attempts among starting quarterbacks. So it is kind of a small sample size. So I don't know. To you, is that impressive that he's doing so much with so little? Or are you looking at that as a small sample size? You need to see more.
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, when you have Kareem Hunt in the backfield, you don't have to throw the ball 50 times a game. You can get away with, you know, 30, 40 passes a game because you can hand it off to him 20 times. It also shows that they're efficient with moving the ball. Like, even if he has these low numbers, if his averages are like 15 yards per pass, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and he is 10th in yards per game with 291 over those 55 pass attempts. So, yeah, not too bad on that average. NFL coaches, also kind of a storyline here through 2 weeks. Not faring so well. Do you think that's going to be a trend moving forward?
Well, the ones that are faring not so well are the new ones, and these new ones aren't on good teams in the first place. When you look at the team comparison between last year and this year, these teams like Arizona, Chicago, Detroit, Indianapolis, New York Giants, Oakland, Tennessee, all of those teams last year were rather unremarkable, with Tennessee being the only one of those that's a playoff team last year. So you don't really have that much of a good background going into this year anyway.
Yeah, you're right. They don't have a lot to work with. That's why they're new coaches. That's why their teams got rid of their old coaches. But their 0-7 combined record in week one was the worst week one in the history of NFL for new coaches. The previous record was 0-6 back in, I believe it was 2001. So they don't have a lot to work with maybe, but they're also setting some records. They did get 3 wins last week, so they are up to 3-11 overall. Still not very good.
No, and some of these games I feel like the coaches should have like won for their team. Chicago went to a triumphant lead on top of Green Bay in week one. Like I said, Aaron Rodgers came back and was the best thing everybody's ever seen on the field this year. But still, that's a game you have control of. You got to lock down. You got to win.
Yeah, I agree. In their defense, the combined record of the teams that they've played is 15-8-1. It was 11-2-1 from opponents that these seven new coaches played in week one. So 11-2-1 combined record for the teams that put them at 0-7. Maybe that makes you feel a little bit better about them.
I mean, yeah, they're playing good teams, but at the same point, these coaches can change the fate and make these good teams not so good teams. Like Indianapolis, for instance, Andrew Luck coming back, that's rough because he hasn't played football in over a year, so them I wouldn't expect a lot from. The Giants, however, I thought they would have eked out a win at least one of those weeks.
Yeah, and like you said, the Bears, too, with that big lead, and they don't find a way to do it. Or John Gruden with the Raiders last week, the last-second field goal from Denver beat them by 1 point. It's another one you'd like to see a close game like that go your way. One-score losses, like we just kind of talked about, 6 of the 11 losses were one-score losses, so maybe that also somewhat works.
Yeah, these are games that can go 50-50 that they just don't get the last say in, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think John Gruden's the most interesting of these new coaches, though, because everybody loves Chucky in Oakland from what he did for them back at the beginning of the century when they went to the Super Bowl after he was with them. But I don't know. Like, what he's done for their team hasn't been great. He's traded all-pro Khalil Mack, who has a better personal stat line than Oakland's own defense does entirely. That can't sit good with you as a coach.
No, and he decided today that it's hard to find a good pass rusher. Another good pass rusher, because you just got rid of your good one. So, yeah, $100 million is a lot for a coach.
Not a lot for Khalil Mack, though.
He's under some pressure. John Gruden is under some pressure. Another guy that's under some pressure is Josh Gordon, recently traded to the New England Patriots from the Cleveland Browns. Will we see the old Gordon in New England?
No, we will not, because the old Gordon is just a depiction people have in their minds. He had one good season, 2013. He only played 14 of the 16 games. He had 87 catches for 1,646 yards and 9 touchdowns. It's a great season, led the league in receiving. However, that was one season. He has not ever played a full 16-game season, and he's been having so many issues in and out of rehab in the last 3 years that I don't know what to expect from the guy anymore, really.
Yeah, I fall into that category of people who had a perceived old Josh Gordon that was a top receiver in the league, And I'm like you. I looked it up, and it was one season. His rookie year, he did well. It was the only time he's played 16 games, 50 catches, 805 yards, 5 touchdowns. Those are good numbers for a rookie.
Right.
Comes back in 2013 with that Pro Bowl season that you talked about. But at the same time, 2-game suspension to start 2013. 2014, a 10-game suspension. Comes back to play 5 games, goes with 24 catches for 303 yards, no touchdowns, gets suspended by the Browns for the last game. That's how he rounds out 2014. Doesn't play in 2015 because of a year-long suspension. Doesn't play in 2016 because of a suspension to start the season, then went to rehab, ended up not playing at all. 2017, he was granted conditional eligibility, giving him the possibility to come back in week 13. He ended up playing 5 games, 18 catches, 335 yards, 1 touchdown, and then obviously this season, we're only 2 games in, he hasn't done a whole lot. Had a touchdown against Pittsburgh, but, I mean, too early to tell for this year. So I don't know if there's an old Josh Gordon necessarily to look for.
Yeah, and, I mean, that was 4 years ago. Like, people's bodies changes. Obviously, his mind has changed tremendously in that time period. And even so, he's on a new team, but he's not the number one guy on New England by any means. Rob Gronkowski is still Tom Brady's number one.
Yes.
He has other receivers such as Chris Hogan that will do well. When he gets Julian Edelman back, that's a good receiver he has. He uses the running backs a lot in the past game, James White especially. I don't know where Josh Gordon fits in necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, if there's anywhere where he's going to be able to revitalize his career and find an old Josh Gordon, or if you almost want to call it a new Josh Gordon, however you want to look at it, if there's any team that's going to bring that out, it's probably New England and it's probably Tom Brady. As much as people don't want to hear that, myself included, that's probably the case.
Yeah, I mean, when you go to you move from a team that's had Deshaun Kizer last year and just so many ragtag quarterbacks through a team to the New England Patriots who have had Tom Brady for this entire century, it's helpful for receivers, but still you have to make it on your own, and I don't know what his own will be yet. I'm interested to see, though. I really am.
Yeah, I am too. You kind of like to see a guy like that bounce back and kind of find a rhythm in New England. Not necessarily in New England, but, you know, that's where he's at.
Yeah.
That's where he can thrive. And, I mean, I think if he can keep himself on the right path, I think you're going to see a receiver that can be a Pro Bowl receiver again. But I think it's going to take some work.
Well, it also helps that, once again, they have a very weak division. They can play the Jets. They play the Dolphins. They'll play the Bills. All those are not great teams against the pass. He can put up some numbers against them. It's just a matter of will he.
Yes. Like you said, where does he fit in? Can he stay on the right path? All that kind of stuff. There's question marks from Josh Gordon, but he certainly has an opportunity in New England. We'll see if he takes advantage.
All right, and moving from the NFL, we now have college football, specifically the Big Ten. There have been some interesting surprises out of the Big Ten this year so far. Some expectations, but at the same point, some of the teams you'd like to see do well just are simply not cutting it right now.
Yeah, so starting with Wisconsin, the Big Ten West is definitely the weaker of the two divisions in the Big Ten. Wisconsin, for me at least, was kind of the unquestioned number one in the Big Ten West, but they come out last week and they lose to unranked BYU 24-21. Not the start you're looking for if you're Wisconsin.
Especially a non-conference loss at home, too. Like, to BYU, that's a team you throw on the schedule and say, all right, easy second week, easy second win. Let's move into conference play now.
Yeah, especially when you're playing in the Big Ten, which is arguably the best conference in college football with the likes of Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State. Wisconsin in the other division, they might not have to play all those teams, but regardless, you're playing in a really strong conference, you want to get those wins early in the season.
Right, especially whenever you have a tough week 3 matchup against Iowa at Iowa, which is very important for your division, seeing how Iowa is really the only other team, in my opinion, that has any chance at winning the Big Ten West.
Yes, and not only are they off to a 3-0 start and have that chance probably as the number 2 in the Big Ten West, but they're going to Iowa, and Iowa is a place where teams with title hopes kind of go to die. Iowa has a way of finding a way to upset teams that they really have no business upsetting.
Yeah, they have a very crazy atmosphere. I remember a few years ago they defeated Ohio State, or maybe even last year, they blew them out of the water. And
yeah, you're right.
I mean, they've always been an in-between team. Like, for me, I've always thought of Iowa as a team on the fringe. They've had seasons where they've been, like, in the top 15 in the country. They've also had seasons where they've finished with, you know, maybe a 7-5 record. So they're a team that you don't want to have to face on the road.
Yeah, and when you pull up the game on Saturday and you watch the game, it's going to say number 18 Wisconsin against unranked Iowa. But if you look at the polls, Iowa is technically number 26 in the AP poll and number 31 in the coaches poll, just based on votes they got. So they're not officially ranked, but they're right there. They're about as close to being a ranked team as you can be without actually being one.
Yeah, and whenever, Wisconsin will easily throw them into the top 25 and push Wisconsin out too.
Yeah, I'd say it would push them right out. Other teams in the Big Ten, Penn State and Ohio State, not a lot to report on those teams. Those are two teams that are 3-0. Penn State sitting tied for 10th in the AP poll, 9th in the coaches poll. Ohio State is 4th in both polls. Kind of just beating the teams they're supposed to beat. No huge showdowns to this point. Not a lot to report.
Penn State struggled the first week against Appalachian State, but that's first week. There's a lot of rust. They are losing Saquon Barkley this year, which is a big, big loss for their team since he was such an important player for the last few seasons. But, I mean, at the same point, the next week they come out and just absolutely demolish Pitt in Pittsburgh, showing that, yeah, we're Penn State, we're still the best team in Pittsburgh or in Pennsylvania.
Right, and the big thing, like you said, that first week they struggled, but they still found a way to pull it out. A poor fourth quarter performance, 28 points given up to Appalachian State, but you find a way to score that touchdown late in the game, tie the game, get to overtime, and find a way to win. And then you look at Ohio State, most teams at this level haven't necessarily played a top team or have a quality win yet. Ohio State does. They just knocked off TCU last week, so that's certainly a step in the right direction for them.
Yeah, and the way they beat TCU was really in dominant fashion too. It was a close game early on, but they ended up winning 40-28, and they looked like the better team. And this was all without Urban Meyer still too.
Right, and they get him back this week, so we'll see what that brings for them. Both those teams sit at 3-0. Not huge games for them this week, but the following week they go head-to-head in Happy Valley, so that'll be a game to keep an eye on later in the season.
Could be a game that decides the Big Ten East very early on, too.
Very easily could be. A couple other teams in the Big Ten East that do stand a chance, Michigan and Michigan State. I'm buying Michigan more than I'm buying Michigan State.
Yeah, Harbaugh's a better coach than whoever the coach is of Michigan State, but I don't think both of them will be good teams. I don't think they'll really contend. It depends how they play against, like, Ohio State and Penn State. But from right now, they haven't looked remarkable. I mean, Michigan State has lost to Arizona State, and Michigan has lost to Notre Dame. If they win those games, they're very formidable teams. But seeing how they lost them, you kind of have to rank them a little bit lower now.
Yeah, and I think the Arizona State maybe looks a little bit better now than it did when they actually lost. But it's still not – when you're coming into the season ranked, they're 24th right now, but they were ranked higher than that. I think 11th at the time of that game. That's a game that you want to win, especially in a conference that is as competitive as it is. Michigan losing to Notre Dame, not quite as bad, because that's a ranked matchup. Notre Dame's a top 10 team. They sit at 19th right now, Michigan does in the AP poll.
Yeah, I really see them, too, as finishing somewhere between 15th and 25th in the end of the year. You know, they'll get like a late December bowl, but I don't really think they'll be that important in the Big Ten overall. I think it's more of Ohio State, Penn State, and then Iowa and Wisconsin type deal.
Yeah, to me, if you're Michigan, you have to beat Penn State and Ohio State to give yourself a chance. If you're Michigan State, I think you have to beat those two plus Michigan. And if either of those two teams are going to meet Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game, I'm going to take my chances with Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that as well.
Just a couple other notes from the Big Ten. There's a big gap between the top teams and the bottom teams in the Big Ten. Rutgers just lost to Kansas 55-14. 55-14 to Kansas.
Rutgers is not a team that belongs in the Big Ten. They were not exactly a great school whenever they were still in the old Big East with Pitt and West Virginia. And they moved to the Big Ten for, I guess it was for money reasons, but it certainly hasn't been for competition reasons because they have not competed any year.
Northwestern's another one, lost to Akron 39-34. Northwestern's a team that's been right in the thick of things kind of these last couple of years, so a loss to Akron is kind of surprising.
Yeah, they've been a team in and out of the top 25, but when you lose to a MAC opponent, that's just not going to cut it for a Big Ten school.
Yeah, and then Nebraska losing to Troy 24-19.
Nebraska has to be one of the biggest football schools that is just not a football school. They have everything that they need there, the coaches, the team, the facility. They just can't win the important games they need to. They are almost better in the Big 12 than the Big 10, too.
Yeah. Those are some teams that either don't belong in the Big 10 or just really don't stand a chance at all in the Big 10. Indiana's a team that could maybe stand a chance in the Big 10. They're 3-0 right now. No votes in either of the polls, so I think that says something about their strength of schedule to this point. Maybe they have a chance, maybe they don't. They're there at the moment. I don't necessarily expect them to stay there.
Yeah, and I've never heard much about Indiana's football team. They've more been a basketball school. Being 3-0 against three out-of-conference teams, which, I mean, it's good whenever you have other teams like Nebraska and Rutgers getting crushed so poorly, but in the end, they still have to play the whole conference, and they'll maybe go 500, and they're nothing really too exciting out of them, I don't think.
I suppose if there's anything you can say for them that you can't say for a Michigan or a Michigan State, it's that they're undefeated and they're taking care of those early games that you would like to take care of before you can get into conference play.
Yeah, you know, a win's a win, and being 3-0 is being 3-0 regardless. If it's an FCS school or number one Alabama, it's still a win anyway.
Yeah, it's the start you want to your season. But yeah, Big Ten, Penn State, Ohio State, Wisconsin, maybe Michigan, Michigan State, and Iowa. Those are your teams to watch in the Big Ten.
All right. After this short break, we will come back with some baseball action.
Welcome back. This is Matt and Chris, RMU Radio Sports Takeover. We're going to move on now to Major League Baseball. We're going to start right here in Pittsburgh with Gregory Polanco. Shoulder injury, 7 to 9 month recovery. What do you think about this injury? Is this a setback for him, or do you think this is a serious threat to his career?
It's only a serious threat to his career if he can't come back. I think he has a spot on this team. He just needs to be able to show that he can still swing and throw, especially when it's his left arm, you know, his main swinging arm, his main throwing arm. That's really, really rough to come back from that kind of injury from.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think it's a threat to his career. It's certainly a setback, especially after 2017 was such a down year for him, and he was kind of getting back in a groove here in 2018 and kind of getting back on track. To see an injury like that, I mean, obviously, Pirates aren't going to the playoffs, so as far as him not finishing the season, it's not a big deal, but you hate to see a guy who struggled last year kind of regain form this year and then be out of the lineup for the next 7 to 9 months.
Yeah, the way he started this season, I was like, oh no, is Polanco the same as he was last year? They moved him off the plate about, I think, halfway through June it was, and he's been very good since then. His season numbers right now, 23 home runs, 81 RBIs, 130 games only, so... You know, if he would have played all 162, he probably could have gotten around maybe 30. That might be a stretch, but 25 would definitely be in there. 254 batting average is not great. However, his 340 on base and 499 slugging, those are the best in his career. So he's really seeing the ball a lot better now.
Yeah, and those 23 home runs are also the best number of his career. And the 81 RBIs, his second highest total. He had 86 back in 2016, but that's with 14 more games played. I think he was really... kind of getting back into things. Wins above replacement, 1.9 this year. It was 0.1 last year.
Yeah, last year he was just downright bad. You could throw anybody in right field and they would have played better. Even defensively last year, you could see where he did not shine. He's coming to his own a little bit this year. When he first came up, everybody was very excited for him because he had a hitting streak to start off. Kind of leveled off. Now we're seeing, you know, consistently, he's probably going to be around a 250, 260 hitter. However, it's the power which everybody wants to see develop though from him.
Right. And stolen bases, too. 8 last year. That was it. Only had 8. 12 this year. Not a huge jump up, but you're kind of seeing a little bit better play on the bases as well.
Well, that comes from here he changed his training, actually. He was going into hardcore strength training entering 2017 season. Obviously, it was a down year. Following that season, he went back to his normal just running around down his hometown of Dominican Republic, actually just normal training, not so much strength, because he had a nagging hamstring issue a lot last year, too, that kept him out of a lot of action, and even when he was in, showed that he was not 100% to play.
Yeah, and that's just another reason that you hate to see an injury like this to this kind of player. You train one way, you have a rough season, you go back to what you were doing before, it works for you, and then your season's derailed. So hopefully he can come back next year and kind of pick up where he left off this year.
Seeing how he's going to miss at least half the season, where does that put the Pirates in general for next season?
Nowhere good. As far as their outfield goes, they're thin.
They're thin
at the outfield. Depth chart right now has Corey Dickerson at left field with Adam Frazier behind him, Starling Marte in center field with Jose Ozuna, and then Luplo in right field. That's pretty much what you're looking at, and I think Dickerson's the backup for right field. So you don't even have a full 6 outfielders. Now they have Pablo Reyes, who they've called up. Josh Harrison's capable of playing the outfield, but then you run into, well, what are you doing on the infield if you move him out there?
Well, the thing about Josh Harrison, he actually has a club option following this season, which I think they will exercise and buy him out because they will not be spending over $12 million on him for next year. And that, my opinion, that puts Frazier actually as a starting second baseman, which even takes away another outfield option for them.
Yeah, and that's assuming that Frazier's under contract for next year.
Yeah, there's a lot of ambiguity about the contract situation. Dickerson is eligible for arbitration, which I feel like the season he's having kind of indicates that he's not going to want to do that. He's probably going to want to sign a deal with some team, maybe not the Pirates.
Hopefully the Pirates, but given the history that the Pirates have spending on players like that, not necessarily.
Yeah, you don't really see big money contracts from just normal free agents. You kind of seen it from like the Ingram players. Like they gave Kutch and Harrison good deals, Marte and Polanco, but you don't really see them being big money spenders for a guy that like Dickerson, who's kind of showing that, yeah, I'm still a good, versatile left fielder. Please sign me anywhere.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe when it comes down to their outfield, the only outfielder that they have definitely under contract for 2019 and healthy to start the season is Starling Marte.
Yeah, that is correct. Jordan Luplo, I still don't consider to be a major league starting outfielder. I mean, he's technically under contract, but if he's out there in right field on opening day, it's just going to be the start of a very long season for them.
Yes. Other prospects that could potentially make the roster next year, Jason Martin, Travis Swaggerty, Brian Reynolds. There are others, but the point is not a lot of major league experience, not a lot of household names. If you don't get some of these regulars signed, You're dealing with a Polanco injury. In addition to Marte, your outfield could look very different and very young.
Well, the reason that's going to look so bad because, A, Polanco got injured, but, B, we traded our best prospect, Austin Meadows, for a guy in Chris Archer who has not shown he's more capable than any of the other starters in our rotation this year, actually.
Yeah, and I think you've been accustomed to hearing Austin Meadows' name. I know trying to come up with who actually we have in the outfield, Austin Meadows is one of the first names that came to mind, and then I had to tell myself, no, he's not here anymore. We traded him. And, I mean, if Chris Archer, he's on the roster next year, he's under contract, so he's not just a rental. Maybe he regains form next year, turns into that ace that we wanted him to be when we traded for him. But with that Polanco injury, and depending on who re-signs and who doesn't sign, losing an outfielder like Austin Meadows could be a big blow next year.
Yeah, I'd say that the pitching on our team is actually in one of the best spots it's been in years. Trevor Williams and Jameson Taillon both have ERAs under 3.2. That's fantastic. I think they will be able to continue this next year as well. They've really looked dominant pretty much from the second half on.
Yeah, and Felipe Rivero's kind of got his act together a little bit in the bullpen as well. So the pitching woes that we've had in years past and the pitching woes that we had at the beginning of the season have kind of worked themselves out as the year went on.
But the offensive woes are really what I think strike the team. You see Josh Bell reducing home runs by about 20 home runs from his rookie season to now his sophomore season. That's not good from a first baseman. You kind of want to see some power out of him. That was what excited the fans last year from him, too.
Yeah, and like you said, you talked about Polanco's power and the power that we wanted to see from him. And whether he was going to have it or not is one thing, but we're definitely not going to see it to start next year. So you talk about the power on offense being a problem. Injuries and other things don't help that.
Absolutely.
So we'll move on now from the Pirates to Major League Baseball in general, talking about the playoff race. We're about 2 weeks out from the MLB playoffs. We'll start with the American League. Not as much to talk about there. It's not set in stone, but it's about as close as it could be.
Yeah, you already have teams clinching, and the Red Sox are going to clinch their division with the next win against the Yankees. Indians have already clinched their division, and the wild card is really not up for grabs. Seattle is the closest to coming into Oakland and the Yankees, but it's not going to be feasible for this season. There's just not enough time left for either of them.
Yeah, you talk about the Red Sox. They've already clinched a playoff spot. You said that they'll clinch the division. They have a 10.5 game lead on the Yankees with, I want to say, 10 or 11 games to play. So, I mean, yeah, that's over in days. Cleveland clinched their division, 14.5 game lead on the next closest team. So that division was never even a race. And they're not only are they 14.5 up on this team in second place, they are 10.5 games behind the Houston Astros, who lead the AL West. So when you get to your playoff picture, you've got the Red Sox at number one. Right now, you've got the Astros at number two, and then you've got 10.5 games between the Astros and the number three team in the Indians.
Yeah, the Indians really have their spot set. They're just going to kind of coast into the postseason with a very, very good pitching staff. They actually just got Trevor Bauer back today as well, which will definitely strengthen them for the postseason.
Yeah, so you've got those two teams in for sure. Houston is 5 games up on Oakland. They have 11 games to play. Oakland also has 11 games to play. Again, not mathematically clinched, but that division is all but clinched for the Astros.
Yeah, there was a time period where Oakland was in first place for like a few games when they were playing Houston, but now things have kind of leveled off, and Houston's kind of pulled ahead and showed that they are going to win the division. Oakland just has a chance at the wild card right now, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's what you expect from your defending World Series champs in the Astros. Oakland kind of came out of nowhere a little bit this year, so good for them for being in this position. But I think from the start of the season, you kind of expected the Astros to make that push, and that's where they're at now.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. The Yankees, I kind of expected what they've shown so far as well. I mean, big money team. They've pretty much gotten every player under the sun that makes $20 million or above. But they're in the same division as the Red Sox, which kind of hurting them in their postseason chances because they're going to have to go through Boston. Whether, if they win the wild card, that's who they're having at play. And they might not even win the wild card. Oakland's been very good.
Yeah, talking about the wild card, the Yankees, you get two wild cards in the playoffs. The Yankees right now are the top one with a 2.5 game advantage over Oakland, who sits at the second spot. The Yankees have 12 games to play. The Oakland A's have 11. Sitting in third place is Tampa Bay, 5.5 games behind the A's. And then the Mariners are there, 7 games back, if you even want to call them there.
Yeah, the Mariners are done. The Rays, I think, would be a great playoff team if they were not in the same division as the Yankees and Red Sox, because they actually have the same record as the Indians. However, they're just in such a tough division, there's nowhere for them to go.
Yeah, and that shows you the kind of division that the Cleveland Indians are in the Central. They've already clinched, while a team that has a better record than them is 5.5 games out of a playoff spot. So an interesting situation in the American League. For me, I would expect the division leaders to stay the same. Obviously, most of them have clinched at this point. And I would expect the Yankees to be that top spot and for the A's to be going to them for the wild card game.
Yeah, the AL is pretty much set. But then we move to the NL, which is as open as it could be.
The National League is very much not set. So you start in the National League East. The Braves, 11 games to play. They're up 5.5 on the Phillies. I would say that of the divisions in the National League, that one's probably the most set in stone. Again, not clinched. But with 11 games to play, 5.5 games swing is a lot. That's pretty much clinched.
Yeah, and the Phillies really haven't even sniffed first place in a few months. The Braves have pretty much been the team. They've been consistent through and through the whole year. I think they're going to easily coast into winning the division.
The one thing I will say for the Phillies is they have two series coming up against the Braves. If they were to make some noise in that division, they kind of control their own fate, but 7 games against your division leader is not an easy way to get wins coming down the stretch. They also have a 4-game set at Colorado, and they have 12 games coming up, which is more than most other teams. I don't know that they have a day off. So at Atlanta for 4, at Colorado for 4, and then home at Atlanta to finish the season. That's a tough end to the season.
You're
going to
be battered by the time you get home because Colorado has been knocking the tar off the ball recently. And, of course, Atlanta, you know, the tough divisional team you got to face twice. I just don't think there's a path to the playoffs for the Phillies this season, maybe next year, but not right now.
Yeah, not to mention they're 6 games out of the second wild card, so they don't even really have a great chance there. The National League Central, the Chicago Cubs are up 3.5 games on the Milwaukee Brewers. The Cardinals are right behind the Brewers. They are 2 games back of the Brewers. Do you think anyone catches the Cubs?
I don't. I really don't. The Cubs have had chances to be caught, and nobody's done it. They played the Brewers last week, and they're still above them. The Cardinals have been a surprise team, actually, in the second half. But even so, they really haven't made any ground on them. I mean, the Cubs have just been in first place for so long. They're what we've come to expect from the Chicago Cubs by now, though. The first-place team, the best-looking team in the National League. I don't think there's much competition as far as the division goes there.
Yeah, they are number one right now. I think they should be number one. 3.5 games is a little more wiggle room for Milwaukee in second place as opposed to the other divisions that we've talked about. But for me, that's not enough for them to get in. I definitely think the Cubs hold on to that division.
Yeah, but and I think Milwaukee and St. Louis need to be conserving their efforts to the wild card, which a wild card could go any way right now.
Yes, Milwaukee is in the best spot. 2 games up on the Cardinals, like I said. They each have 10 games to play. The Rockies are in third place, so they sit 1.5 games behind the Cardinals for that second wild card spot. They have 11 to play. Then you get into the Phillies and the Diamondbacks, 6 back. That's coming into today. There were some games this afternoon. I believe the Cardinals lost. So that changes things a little bit, but, I mean, for the most part, that's what you're looking at. I think the Rockies can make some noise. I don't know that, like we already said, the Phillies, I don't know that the Diamondbacks are going to make a whole lot of noise either.
Yeah, I think the Diamondbacks season's kind of falling off the wagon a little bit. They're only 4 games above 500 now, whereas they were leading the division for a lot the time in June. But the main reason that is because the Dodgers have come kind of out of nowhere. It's kind of what you'd expect from the Dodgers, but even so, with the way they start their season, you wouldn't have expected them to come on so strong towards the end of it.
Yeah, and the playoffs are all about momentum. I think the Penguins found that out. Perfect example, 2016. You go in on a hot streak and good things happen. If you're the Dodgers and you're coming out of nowhere, essentially, that's where you want to be. If you're the Diamondbacks and you're sitting in first in the middle of the summer and now you're sitting 6 games out of a playoff spot, you're trending in the wrong direction. I don't know that they're going to get in. But the West is interesting. Like you said, the Dodgers have surged into first place. Their lead, though, is only 1.5 games over the Rockies. So the Rockies are 1.5 games out of the wild card. They're also 1.5 games out of the division. So the Rockies have some options.
Yeah, I think the Rockies are the best. I think they might even have a better chance than St. Louis to make the playoffs. They are currently in a series with the Dodgers, which they lost last night, so that's why it went from 0.5 games to 1.5 games. But, you know, you flip a win one way or another, they're right up there in first place, and they have been hitting the tar off the ball a lot. Arenado and Story each have about 35 home runs and 100 RBIs. You come to expect that from Colorado, but still, Story's kind of come out of nowhere in the second half. He really wasn't talked about much in the first half as like an MVP-type candidate. Now you start to see him being brought up in conversation about it.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you about thinking that they have a better chance than the Cardinals. I don't know. I don't really have a good reason why, I guess. But I definitely like the Rockies over the Cardinals. And, I mean, maybe it's because the Rockies have 2 chances to get in. But for me, the Cardinals are a team that I didn't expect to be here at the beginning of the season. The Dodgers are, and the Rockies that you think could be. So I think if you look at the better team maybe on paper, you've got the Dodgers and the Rockies over the Cardinals.
Well, you have to expect the Dodgers would be a better team on paper when they added so many big players at the deadline, like Machado, and they added Brian Dozier as well. But even with those guys, they're not showing that they're the best team still. They're still fighting and struggling, scrapping to get into first place. The Rockies have effectively had the same team all season, and they've been the most consistent team, I would say, out of the West. They've always been at the top of the division, always doing well. Just they look really good, and their pitching has actually been extraordinary. You think playing Colorado, more home runs, but Kyle Freeland has a below a 3 ERA for them, which is really remarkable.
Yeah, and talking about the wild card race again, you talk about the St. Louis Cardinals having, in our opinions, not a great chance to get in. They don't have an easy finish here. They've got they lost to Atlanta this afternoon. They've got San Francisco at home for three. That's a series that they're going to need to capitalize on, because then they have Milwaukee at home for three, and they go to the Chicago Cubs for three. So, I mean, I guess if you win those games, you're in a good position to get in, but if you lose those games, you're losing the teams that you're chasing.
And even so, when you see them playing these kind of teams, like the Cubs end the season, it's the make or break type. If you win, you're going to be in. If you lose, you're going to be out. But if you win, you have much better path into the postseason and further in postseason, because you show that you can beat the best teams that are in the division and in the league right now.
That's definitely true. Milwaukee to end the season, Cincinnati tonight, three at Pittsburgh, three at St. Louis, three at home against the Tigers. I don't know that there's anything too challenging for them there.
No, not at all.
The Dodgers and Rockies have a game tonight. That's going to be a big one in that division. The Dodgers then have three against the Padres at home, three at the Diamondbacks, three at San Francisco. Diamondbacks could be tough. San Francisco, I don't know. Ending with six on the road, though, could that be a problem for them?
I don't know if it'll necessarily be a problem. It'll be challenging. I feel like the Diamondbacks are kind of going to try to play spoilers, because I feel like at this point they're out. They'll be out even more solidified whenever they play the Dodgers, so they can be like, hey, we might have lost our season, but maybe we can, you know, beat the Dodgers and still show that just because we didn't get in, you got in with a worse chance than us.
Yeah. And kind of on the opposite side, the Rockies, obviously the Dodgers tonight, three at Arizona this weekend, which could be a big series for them. Then they end at home with seven games, four against the Phillies, three against the Nationals. I would say if you're the Colorado Rockies, that's not a bad way to end your season.
Yeah, finishing with seven at home versus the Dodgers having six on the road really just changes the whole perspective that the NL West has right now. The Diamondbacks this weekend will be the toughest for them, I think, but I'd expect from the Phillies and Nationals, those seven games, they win at least five of them.
Yeah, again, that division is a one-and-a-half game difference. The two teams play tonight and kind of have very different schedules as they come down the stretch here to wind out the season. So if there's any division that you want to keep an eye on, the NL West is going to be the one.
All right, coming up next, we will have some quick picks and some bold predictions to finish out the show for tonight. Stay tuned.
You feel like you're alone, Will? You have a soulmate? Somebody who challenges you? I'm talking about someone who opens up things for you, touches your soul. You can't give back to them, no? You'll never have that kind of relationship in a world where you're always afraid to take the first step, because all you see is every negative thing 10 miles down the road. You can do anything you want. You are bound by nothing.
Yeah. Are you my soulmate? My angel? What do you want with me? Too high? Too high. Slow pace? My eyes closed? No matter what, one day every show me divine love. Where was you when I was lonely? My divine love. Which day we go? Place or song? Sounds so blue. So wrong, I'm right here. Yeah, why do you stay on my case? I try to make you feel okay. Do you know I'm in pain? I give you clothes, you misconstrued. You continue to push me far away. Why don't you call my name? It's like you forgot my face. I just want a taste of everything you made of. We ain't
nothing.
Cut the strings of my balloon. Watch me fly. Yeah. Till when are you coming through to free my mind? Are you happy with your life? Come and satisfy, open up, let me inside. When you take off all your clothes, I'm under your control. Rolling up, you get me high. Right. You the one to show me divine love. Where was you when I was lonely? My divine love. Sound so clear. Baby, where'd you go? What's so wrong? I'm right here.
Welcome back. Sports Takeover, Matt and Chris. We're going to wind things down here. We're going to go with some quick picks. So some of the bigger matchups in the next week here. Just going to briefly tell you who we got, maybe why, and we'll move right along. So we're going to start in the NFL. Saints at Falcons. I'm going with the Falcons. They're at home. Their defense is 11th in yards per game. New Orleans ranked 29th. Two potent offenses. Given those defenses, I'll take the Falcons.
I'm going to go with the Saints, actually. I really believe more in Drew Brees than I do in Matt Ryan. Julio Jones has not shown up yet this season, whereas Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas have shown up. I got the Saints.
Fair point.
Next, we got Broncos at Ravens. I will go with Denver, surprisingly enough. Case Keenum, I feel, has taken control of this team, and I didn't expect it from him at the beginning of the season, but I'm kind of interested to see where it will go.
I'm going to disagree with you and take the Baltimore Ravens. They demolished the Bills in week one, didn't look good against Cincinnati last week, so I'm looking for a bounce back from their defense. Points per game, Baltimore's putting up 35, Denver's putting up 23.5. What does that mean? We'll find out, but I'm going to go with the Ravens. Raiders-Dolphins is your next one. I'm going to take the Raiders. I think it's going to be an evenly matched game. You've got the Dolphins playing good football right now. The Raiders have been kind of right there. John Gruden's looking for that first win. To me, I just don't see Oakland as an 0-3 kind of team or Miami as a 3-0 kind of team, so I'm going to take the Raiders.
I agree with that last point about them not being 0-3 and 3-0 teams, but I'm going to have to say the Dolphins. Nothing about the Raiders this year has shown me that they can win, especially against a 2-0 team. Defense does not look great. Derek Carr, Marshawn Lynch, they've been average at best. I got Ryan Tannehill and the Dolphins. Next, moving into college football, we got Texas A&M against Alabama. You can't go wrong with Bama. They've put up more than 50 points in each of the first 3 weeks. Both quarterbacks look great. Nick Saban looks like he's ready to coast into the college football playoff once again.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's Alabama. It's a 22 versus number one matchup, but it's a 26-point spread. Alabama's heavy favorites. Alabama's been number one in the country for the last 20 years. I'm going to take Alabama.
And there's no Johnny Football to save Texas A&M this year.
Another good point. Stanford at Oregon. I'm going to take Stanford. Another top 25 matchup. It's number 7 Stanford, number 20 Oregon. It's in Oregon. Bryce Love for Stanford, star running back. Slow start to the season. He sat out last week, so he's coming off a week of rest. Oregon's played a pretty soft schedule to this point. They have a good run defense through the first few games, but they also have an FCS school on that schedule that they beat. I'm going to take the higher team. I'm going to take Stanford.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you on that one. Stanford just seems to be the more complete team, in my opinion. Bryce Love is a Heisman candidate. He will and most definitely should run over that Oregon defense, and I think it will actually be an easy win for Stanford on the road, which will further throw them into the top 10. Following them, we kind of alluded to it earlier, Iowa and Wisconsin in Iowa. I have to go with the Hawkeyes. They really have shown to be an interesting team to play on the road, and I don't think that Wisconsin is going to play very well coming off of a loss to BYU at home. I just don't see it happening.
I actually took it the other way. I'm taking Wisconsin in part because of that loss last week. I think you kind of have to bounce back. I would hope that maybe that's a wake-up call for them. I don't know. I mean, that's number 18, Wisconsin. Iowa's not ranked, but like we talked about before, they're right there. Big game in the West, in the Big Ten West. I'm going to go with Wisconsin. One more quick pick here to round it out. We're going to switch to baseball. Rockies at Diamondbacks have a three-game set this weekend. We talked about their position in the playoff picture. I'm going to go with the Diamondbacks. 2-1. They've got Greinke going in game two. They've got Corbin going in game three. They're at home. I'm going to go with the Diamondbacks.
I'm going to have to disagree with you on that one as well. I'm going to have to go with the Rockies 2-1. I feel like that will just solidify them as the playoff team that they are. Story and Arenado will do great. There's no J.D. Martinez anymore for the Diamondbacks to save them at this point in the season. They didn't make the big trade they needed to. I think this is over for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, offense is definitely going to have to be the factor. If the Rockies are going to win, the Diamondbacks need that pitching to be good for them. So that rounds out the quick picks. Last part of the show here, we're going to go with some bold predictions for the upcoming week, for the upcoming season, whatever it might be. We're going to see what we can come up with. So for me, going way out here, I'm taking the Cleveland Browns to win their first game since December 24th, 2016. They've got the New York Jets this week. I think the Cleveland Browns are a significantly better team than we saw last year and the year before. They've been close these first 2 weeks, a tie with Pittsburgh, just barely leaving New Orleans with a loss last week. Hopefully, not necessarily hopefully, but for their sake, hopefully they can get that first win in almost 2 years. Fun fact about the last time that they won, their starting quarterback was Johnny Manziel. RG3 got the win in their last win, and Cody Kessler finished that game because although RG3 got the win, he did not. He got hurt and had to leave the game with a concussion.
So even when the Browns win, they can't pick one quarterback. They got to spread the wealth between them all.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Kind of in the football realm, the Steelers, I think, unfortunately, they will begin the season 0-2-1. They will go to Tampa Bay, and Fitzmagic will be on full display against our horrific secondary. It's not the start to the season I envisioned. I really thought they'd start out 3-0, but given how they played these last 2 weeks, an 0-2-1 start seems to be the only thing really possible in my mind for the way this team has shown themselves so far.
Yeah, my second bold prediction kind of piggybacks off of that. I'm going to say that Patrick Mahomes and Ryan Fitzpatrick combine for 8 or more touchdowns for the third week in a row. I don't have a number on how often that's happened. I can't imagine it's happened very often. 8 touchdowns between 2 quarterbacks in 1 week is a lot of touchdowns. But like I said earlier, Mahomes is going against the 25th ranked pass defense in the 49ers. Ron Fitzpatrick is playing the Pittsburgh Steelers, who surrendered 6 touchdown passes last week to Patrick Mahomes. I'm saying 8-plus for the two of those guys combined this week.
If Fitzpatrick wins, do you think he's going to come out to the press conference in such a way that he came out this past week?
I don't see why not.
It's working for him so far. My second bold prediction moves into baseball. So the Pirates had a game against the Marlins rained out recently. That was rescheduled for the first Monday of October because there are still technically playoff implications for the Pirates. However, I think that the Pirates will not make the playoffs, obviously. I feel like everybody believes that. But once they're mathematically eliminated, that game does not matter, so it will be canceled. And they will finish the season at 80-81, one game below the 500 mark. Disappointing fans once again, like they've done so well for the last 20 years.
Yeah, for the struggles that they've had in recent years to try to pull out a winning season or at least a losing season, that would certainly be very fitting for an end to this one.
Absolutely.
So my last bold prediction, I'm going to go outside of the box. I'm going to go to golf. This week is the final tournament of the FedEx Cup playoffs to crown the champion for the year. I'm going to go with Dustin Johnson to win the FedEx Cup. Now, I don't necessarily have him winning the tournament this week. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. He currently sits in fourth place. The lowest possible finish he could have in the tournament this weekend to still win overall is a 3-way tie for second. So he does not have a lot of wiggle room, but he is my pick to win the FedEx Cup.
All right. He has a lot of work to do, but you think he can do it, so we'll see what happens. And my last bold prediction will be into the Premier League in England. I believe that Jose Mourinho is not the coach that Manchester United needs. I think that United will not finish inside the top four this season, and Mourinho will be fired before the end of the season, finally ending his term in the Premier League, which was with Chelsea, suffered with them, he's suffering with United. He's just not the coach anymore for these teams.
I'm no soccer guru, but I know that that's a good team, and I know that that's a big deal. So, yeah, I would say bold indeed.
Yeah, top four guarantees Champions League, which is like the overall European Cup. So if they don't finish in that, they kind of got to claw their way into that, which is not good for having such a diehard fan base.
Yeah, big trouble for them there, potentially. So that wraps up our show for the week. Thank you for tuning in. My name's Matt. Chris is with me. This is Sports Takeover on RMU Radio. We'll see you next week.